Fort must have been hit, Valorius surmised. The running guardsmen hadn't got far before more shapes materialized from out of the darkening pall behind them. These were hunched, brutish. They emerged first in dozens, then hundreds. As Polixis watched, yet more joined them, charging out of the drifting ash bank barely 100 yards behind the fleeing humans. "Enemy contacts!" the voice of the Tamaran commander clicked over the link. "Approaching maximum range! Make ready!"
"Hold your fire," Valorius interjected. "You'll hit those men."
He switched to addressing Lieutenant Tyrannus on the command channel, speaking with rapid, clipped efficiency.
"Forward units still in the open in Sector 13, approximately 300 yards from the base of the ridgeline. I'm taking a detachment to bring them in, pending your orders."
Waiting only for confirmation that the message had been transmitted, Valorius blink-selected two of his intercessors, brothers Vito and Albanius, over the visor display.
"With others pickets, we wouldn't have known about this attack until it was too late. We shall not abandon them. On me."
The three Primaris pulled themselves up over the parapet and dropped down on the other side. Polixis went with them. Valorius turned, a warning hand going up to the apothecary's breastplate.
"Do not risk yourself, brother. This needs to be done quickly." "As I recall, I beat your most recent time in the training runs, Sergeant. Some of those men are likely injured, and even if they are not, what will you do if you or a member of your squad falls while recovering them? I am coming with you."
There was no time for debate. Valorius chambered a round in his auto-bolt rifle and set off down the slope, voxing that Brother Gallus had command until he returned. Polixis, Vito, and Albanius followed, fanning out either side as they went. Their armor struggled in the yielding ash, the stabilizers working hard to keep them upright as they moved as swiftly as possible downhill. Polixis unclamped his absolver pistol as he went. Beneath him, the full weight of the greenskin assault was becoming apparent, spreading left and right as far as the ash cloud permitted him to see. All along the rest of the line, heavy weapons teams and battle tanks embedded into the ridge opened fire. Heavy bolters and autocannons began battering out streams of tracer-guided hard rounds into the darkening gloom, while missiles, mortar shells, and battle cannon rounds tore gaps in the onrushing tide in sudden bursts of dust, steel, and ripped green bodies. The section directly ahead and around Squad Valorius, however, remained eerily silent. It felt as though they were descending into the pit of a cauldron, or some sheltered valley removed from the thunder and flashes of the storm that raged amidst the peaks all around. Polixis heard Valorius give the order to open fire, and the trio of intercessors either side of the apothecary began to shoot on the move, their bolt rifles bang-clicking with a steady stream of controlled bursts. The guardsmen ahead had spotted them and redoubled their efforts, stumbling through the ash as bolt shells whipped past with lethal precision. The greenskins closest behind tumbled down in the dust, skulls and chests pulverized by the detonating rounds. There was some return fire, but even stationary orcs were horrific marksmen. On the move, their shots sprayed the air and twitched bursts of ash from the ground, but nothing came close. The Primaris reached the foot of the ridge, the space between them and the recon team closing rapidly. Then the infantry lining the redoubts on the ridge above opened fire, and the night dissolved in an eye-aching blaze of death. Hanlon knew Wilk was struggling. The Vox operator, weighed down by his kit, had begun falling behind as they ran.
"Give him cover!"
Hanlon shouted, forcing herself to slow her pace. She'd barely uttered the words when a crack from the ash swirling about them was followed by the sight of half of Wilk's skull bursting open in a mist of brain and bone.
"Thrown, damn it!"
Hanlon panted, waving for the rest of the squad to keep going. They carried on, lost in the dust, deafened and disorientated as they stumbled and gasped for breath in their rubbery respirator masks. The pounding of her heart had grown painful in Hanlon's chest, and her muscles burned with unrelenting strain. A little part of her just wanted to collapse, to lie down and let the oncoming beasts trample her. The memory of the Chimera crew's gory fate kept her going. If not for herself, she had to carry on for the rest of the team. She'd already lost Wilk. She wouldn't let the others down. Shells screamed from out of the darkness, each detonation shaking the earth underfoot and throwing up more ash to shroud their surroundings. One struck so close that it threw them all to the ground, and Hanlon heard the whicker of shrapnel as it whipped past. A piece of undistinguishable flesh, the blasted remains of one of their pursuers, impacted into the dust beside her as she stumbled back to her feet. They were right behind them. Then the ash cleared, like a sign from the God Emperor himself, and they were out, past the worst of the barrage's dust cloud. Ridge One reared up before them, bristling with defensive works and weapon emplacements, and lit by spotter lights. From somewhere deep inside, Hanlon felt fresh vitality power her limbs, throwing her towards that yearned-for slope and the safety of sandbags and brothers-in-arms. As she ran, she could see heavy weapons on the ridge either side opening fire on the wave of orcs pouring from the dust, but the positions directly above remained silent. She began to panic, thinking that they'd been abandoned and the recon team would reach the redoubts seconds before the orcs punched through an empty gap in the Imperial line. Then she spotted movement, and her mind surged with fresh hope. Four figures had clambered over the parapets of one of the redoubts. Four giants, clad in heavy armor. Even as she saw them, her mind refused to believe what it was witnessing. Four members of the Adeptus Astartes, Ultramarines, the God Empress Praetorians. They were real, after all. The Space Marines began to move down the slope as the Numerians neared its base, and Hanlon realized that they were coming to give them close-range covering fire. She threw herself on, vaguely aware of the rest of her squad doing likewise around her. They couldn't falter now. They just couldn't. Then, less than 100 paces from the foot of the ridgeline, with the Ultramarines covering fire whipping past, the rest of the Imperial forces defending Ridge One joined the battle. There was a spectacular crack, like the shattering of worlds, as the Lasgun-armed infantry all along the line unleashed their first volley. The new night was lit up by thousands of darts of brilliance, red, green, blue, as the regiments holding Ridge One poured small-arms fire into the rising tide. Xenos went down, their bodies riddled with dozens of cauterized las wounds, flesh blown to atoms by higher mega-fuel shots. Those behind trampled their erstwhile kin as they closed on the foot of the ridge. The guard above Hanlon fired as well, and the sudden blaze of light momentarily blinded her. She tripped and fell, no breath to cry out as she thumped into the ash and heard the familiar whip-crack of lasbolts, thousands of them searing overhead. She scrabbled in the grey dust, panting, spots flaring before her eyes as her sight slowly returned. For long seconds, she didn't know where she was or what she was doing. She realized something was standing over her, its broad shoulders blocking the blizzard of illumination that had descended on the space between the ridgeline and the edge of the orc attack. At first, Hanlon thought it was a greenskin. She gasped air into her lungs, scrabbling among the soft, dry ash for her rifle. A hand stopped her. It gripped her beneath one arm, and seemingly without effort, hauled her up onto her feet. She found herself staring into burning red eyes and an unyielding white helmet visor, caked with dust.
"You can run,"
scraped a voice, seemingly forged from iron. Hanlon only managed to nod. Her heart was racing, and she could barely breathe. It seemed impossible that she could be standing so close to something so vast and so implacable, and yet still be permitted to live. The mere hum of its active battle plate was making her teeth ache.
"Then go."
The huge figure thrust her towards the ridgeline. She stumbled, but carried on, half bent over, no longer even aware of whether or not the rest of the team was still with her. All that mattered was the slope, the damnable, exhausting, seemingly endless slope, and reaching the top of it before the lasbolts flying overhead or the monsters charging from behind reached her. Polixis.
"Maintain covering fire," Valorius ordered.
The three intercessors stood like a blue bulwark amidst the rising green tide, autobolt rifles rattling as they cut down the waves that threatened to crash over them. The greenskins were close enough for Polixis to have opened fire too, his power armor compensating for the recoil of the Absolver bolt pistol as he snapped shots off into the seemingly endless morass of savagery stampeding towards him. From the glance that he was able to snatch left and right, it looked to Polixis as though the orc charge was at its furthest extent directly ahead. The fact that the Astra Militarum holding the ridge above had been forced to hold fire for so long had allowed the greenskins to gain more ground than anywhere else along the line. They'd followed hard on the heels of the retreating Imperials, without the threat of the barrage being laid down on either side. Valorius himself hadn't authorized the Tamarins to open fire. Clearly, one of their commanders had panicked. So far, however, their shots had all whipped over and past the Ultramarines, and the small band of battered, exhausted Numerians now slogging up the slope. None had been carrying obvious wounds, and Polixis had sent them on while the Primaris gave them covering fire. They had only a few seconds more before they too would have to turn or risk being overrun. Thunder rolled across the ridgeline, separate from the continuous hammering of the artillery and the heavy weapons emplacements. A ripple of detonations burst close to the base of the slope, just north of where Polixis stood. He caught a darting light streak overhead, followed by another. More explosions flared amongst orc hordes, snapshots of light silhouetting disintegrating bodies and wrecked equipment. The Imperial Navy's air support had arrived from Croton, scrambled the moment the pickets had reported massed movement in the evening shadows.
"Grenades!" Valorius snapped. "Then fall back on the apothecary!"
The intercessors sent a trio of fragmentation grenades arcing into the horde, while Polixis began to move backwards up the slope, reloading as he went. Blasts ripped open the nearest greenskins, and the Ultramarines used the few seconds' respite to move back after the exhausted Numerians. Valorius was last to begin moving, unloading clip after clip from his weapon's drum magazine as he went. An orc with a primed stick grenade in one fist went down just before he could lob the explosive, the blast adding to the decimation of those around it. Still the orcs came. They hit the bottom of the slope and rushed up it without pause, iron-shod boots digging into the soft earth. Still the Imperial Guard poured in their lasfire, mowing down rank after rank with a latticework of blazing energy bolts. Some of the orcs charged head-first into the coils of razor wire that had been hastily dragged out before the sandbag redoubts. Those that hit it were snared and dragged into the vicious wires, and those behind simply trampled over them, even as their kindred roared and writhed, tough bodies slowly shredded, dark blood drenching the ash. The attack bore no hallmarks of careful consideration or tactical nuance. It was an animalistic stampede, and it seemed as if nothing was going to be able to stop it. Valorius paused a little over halfway up the slope, and now stood his ground, still firing, silhouetted against the charging horde by the flare of his bolt rifle. Teeth clenched, Polixis doubled back and snatched his pauldron, dragging him half around.
"No more sacrifices, Sergeant! Not while I'm here! Get back!"
Valorius turned back to the Xenos and started to shoot once more, but he also began to move again, backwards, up the last 100 yards, firing his assault weapon from the hip with a degree of accuracy far beyond unaugmented humans. The air was heavy with return fire, but Polixis paid it no heed. Amidst the storm of las and hard rounds, a warrior could do little more than put his faith in his battle plate and the hand of the Emperor. The Numerians were at the redoubts, scrambling up over the parapets and dropping onto the firing steps beyond. The thunder of the rest of Squad Valorius's bolt rifles had joined the fire of the Tamarins around them, and the edge of the orc assault seemed to come apart before Polixis's eyes as he finally reached the safety of the Imperial lines. He accepted the offered gauntlet of Brother Gallus, servos whirring as he pulled himself up and over the defensive works and down onto the other side. As Valorius, Vito, and Albanius joined him back in the redoubt, he became aware of the crack of auto-rifles amidst the familiar thunder of the intercessor's bolter fire. He realized that the recon team they'd just rescued had taken up positions on the firing step alongside the hulking Primaris, and almost without pause were now adding their fire to the fusillade being poured into the onrushing greenskins. Despite coming within feet of being torn apart, the soldiers hadn't hesitated to continue to do their duty. Polixis stood alongside one and began firing his pistol, a sudden, unexpected surge of pride rising within him. It was not just for his brothers or the chapter that he fought, but also for all mankind. As long as a human fought on Ridge One, he would not abandon it. Castor. Castor watched in silence as the orcs charged up the slope towards him. There were thousands of them, brute savages clad in rough leathers, pelts and scrap metal, wielding cleavers and axes and slug guns that they fired indiscriminately at the redoubts or skywards into the ash clouds. Some scrambled up the shifting slope on all fours, like mindless animals, while the bigger ones actively pushed and shoved their smaller kin into the dirt so they could be at the forefront of the assault. Castor despised them. He had done so since he had first heard of them, in the stories told in the haylofts or around the shepherd campfires of Ajax's agri-collectives. They were mankind's ancient enemy, the most common antagonists in the tales of the mighty ultramarines that colored the native folklore of his homeworld. That initial hatred had only grown after his induction, and their full savage nature had been laid bare before him. They were the bane, not just of humanity, but of civilization itself. They sought only endless war, tearing down all that was ordered and anything that was peaceful, from one end of the galaxy to the other. Like an infestation, they would spring up, and only righteous flame could truly eradicate their barbarism. Everywhere mankind went, the greenskins fought them there. There were few things Castor yearned for more than the annihilation of their alien race. For that reason, the more he saw pouring from the dust and darkness below, the more he silently rejoiced. More to slaughter, more to eradicate. He would see their bodies butchered and their spores burned. No trace of their existence would be left on Ikara by the time he was finished. His twin hearts leapt in his breast when the Imperial line opened fire, and his optics saw the leading edge of the horde savaged in righteous detail. He watched as Lasbolts in their thousands ripped, punched, and burned into green flesh, liquefying organs, searing away brain matter, and sending bodies tumbling and rolling through the ash. Nearby, Squad Domitian's hellblasters were adding even more glory to the blaze that was lighting up the night, the eye-achingly brilliant bolts of their plasma weapons turning whole mobs of alien warriors to just more blackened ash in a few seconds of concentrated firepower. The heavy weapons of the Imperial Guard did even more egregious slaughter. Heavy bolters and autocannons mowed down the oncoming ranks, while missiles and mortar shells and the greater munitions of battle tanks and artillery rent great gaps in the alien masses. It was butchery, unadulterated and raw, and it made Castor's heart soar and his voice break out in praise of the Emperor. Below, the green tide faltered, and for the first time since they had come storming from Shebat's ruins, the aliens' offensive stalled.
"See how they falter beneath our righteous fury!"
Castor intoned, beginning to pace the line once more, voice thundering over the fury of the barrage.
"Load and fire, soldiers of the Emperor! Load and fire! They will not stand!"
He forced himself to check his own rising passion long enough to review the Fulminata's tactical display. All squads were holding their positions, ammunition was being expended at a manageable rate, and the kill counters were soaring. He frowned when he saw the automatic log showing that Polixis had accompanied three members of Squad Valorius down the slope moments before to cover a retreating picket unit, but it seemed their gamble had worked, for they were now shown as safely back within the defences of Section 13. Castor growled. He would have to have words with his brother again following the night's engagement. The chapter could not risk losing him. He could not risk losing him.
"Pick your target, soldiers," he said,
as he carried on, through a section held by a battalion of Faeburn vanquishers.
"Aim for their legs. Bring them down, and they will be crushed by those behind. Do not waste a single shot."
Plastus' squad, the last section of the Fulminata to the north, were holding the bulwark just past the Faeburns. Tyrannus was with them. The lieutenant had unclamped his power sword and now stood with it, point down, gauntlets resting on its hilt, as he analyzed the damage being done to the orc assault.
"They will break soon,"
Castor said, as he joined him.
They are bringing up armor,
Tyrannus responded. Greenskin scrap wagons and looted battle tanks were beginning to emerge from the ash cloud to the rear of the orc lines, and a few had even started lobbing shells into the ridge's forward slope. They were being destroyed almost as swiftly as they emerged, though, an easy target for the Lascannon teams and embedded Lehman Russ squadrons lining the area just below the crest.
15 more minutes,
Tyrannus estimated.
I pray they hold for longer, Castor replied. By the Emperor's will, I hope every Xenos in Shabbat throws itself at us, here and now. I should not have doubted the Astra Militarum,
Tyrannus said.
They are standing their ground. Thanks to your directives, Castor said. And your sermons, Brother Chaplain.
This time, Castor didn't respond. An explosion tore through the redoubt he had just passed through. He felt the blast wave hammer into his back, followed by the battering impact of debris and shrapnel. He turned as smoke and ash shrouded Clastis and the other ultramarines in the bulwark. The position occupied by the Faeburn vanquishers was no more. The sandbags and flakboards had been shattered, and the scorched, churned-up earth was littered with the remains of eviscerated guardsmen. Wounded and dazed soldiers were stumbling through what had formerly been a disciplined firing sector. In an instant, the barrage that had been tearing into the orc assault from that part of the line was gone. The greenskins below roared and renewed their charge, pounding up the slope towards the open wreckage left in the detonation's wake. Castor began to run at the breach, instinct taking over. But even as he did so, an even more immediate threat registered with his Genhance senses. Over the sounds of the oncoming greenskins and the renewed thunder of Squad Clastus's bolt rifles, he could hear a noise as dire as it was familiar. The shriek of more incoming munitions, and the rattle of crude engines in the night sky above. Chapter 6. Codex Compliant. Polixis.
Repeat! The line has been breached! Guard reserve units are inbound!
Polixis heard Clastus's report over the Vox just before the detonation ripped through their section of the line. Something went off just a few yards to the rear of the sector held by Squad Valorius, toppling a heap of sandbags and showering the position's defenders in a rain of dirt and ash.
"Cover!"
Valorius barked, more for the benefit of the Astra Militarum than the Primaris around him. More explosions followed. A mortar redoubt to the rear took a direct hit, and the next wave of debris that came raining down included thick strings of gore and torn flesh.
"Xenos bombers!" Valorius growled over the link. "Where in Gilliman's name is the Navy?"
The question remained unanswered. More detonations ripped their way across the ridgeline. Polixis saw a redoubt less than 100 paces to the south take a glancing hit, concussed guardsmen flung against their own defences, the shooting faltering as the line buckled and men clambered, dazed, back towards the firing step. A Numerian mobile artillery battery 500 yards back towards the rear of the ridge was the next position struck. The dugout blew up spectacularly, levelling a portion of the slope and decimating a Kelistan battalion holding in reserve nearby. Another orc bomb struck dangerously close to Chevik's command dome, gutting a chimera and horribly wounding a clutch of staff officers. A third almost wiped out Squad Nerva. It hit directly ahead of their dugout, killing a mob of the orcs charging the position, along with almost all of the guardsmen holding it with the ultramarines. The smoke cleared to reveal the Primaris, their armor battered, scarred, and splattered with ash and blood, standing amidst an expanse of mangled human and alien remains, splintered flakboard, and ripped sandbags. Polixis began to move north towards Nerva's position, his visor lighting up with 4 separate minor wounds requiring treatment. How they hadn't suffered more grievous injuries, when all else around them had been reduced to ruin, spoke as much of the durability of Mark X power armor and the strength of Primaris physiology as it did the guiding hand of the Emperor. Not that Polixis would have admitted as much to Castor. He moved in among the Tamarans holding the section between Nerva and Valorius, just as Ridge One's aerial defences began to hit back at the airborne attack. Hydroflak batteries interspersed among the rear line started to thud as they sent streams of tracer-guided shot into the night sky, seeking out the greenskin aircraft rattling over far above. The darkness, already lit by lasbolts and the flare of detonations, was further illuminated by laddering pillars of flak and bursts of flame where the Hydras found their mark. One of the first greenskin aircraft to be hit came apart in the sky directly north of Polixis. He stopped as he saw the aircraft's remains, wreathed in fire and black smoke, hurtling towards his position. His Genhan sensors slowed the moment down, and he witnessed every detail in perfect clarity. The remnants of the still-turning rotorblades, the greenskin's skullcliff mounting the prow of the disintegrating cockpit section, the one wing spinning slowly away like debris, leaving a planet's orbit riddled with flak damage. He saw it all. His mind calculated angles and trajectories, and he realized in the time it took for one of his hearts to beat that in all likelihood he was about to die. Then training, reinforced by a century's experience, took over.
"Down!"
he bellowed at the pelt-clad Tamarans around him. He snatched the nearest two by their shoulders and hauled them onto the duckboards at the redoubt's base. Everyone else seemed to move with an aching slowness, and the world was filled with the roar of the destroyed alien aircraft as it came plummeting in to meet the ridge. At that moment, kneeling amidst the tribesmen, his head bowed and his eyes closed, Polixis realized his last thoughts were of home. He had never seen it so clearly. Another boy was at his side, stood amidst fields of golden corn that stretched in every direction, undulating gently beneath a pale blue sky. He realized that the boy was Custer, young and smiling once again. He'd forgotten that vista until that moment, until the point of death. To his own surprise, it brought a small, private smile to his lips. The aircraft hit. The world seemed to turn and spin, and he allowed his Lyman's ear to bring him blessed silence, cancelling out the horrid fury of the impact and the explosions which followed. His mind reset, like a newly initiated cogitator block running through its basic systems. He was aware that he'd been thrown onto his side against the redoubt's rear wall, and that part of it had collapsed on top of him. He was aware of a body, ripped and bloody, striking him after he landed. He felt pain in his left wrist and right thigh, and his visor lit with warnings. Penetrative wounds, neither serious. A regular human would have been left stunned and grievously injured, but the mind of a Primaris could not be impaired by shock or trauma. Even as he landed, Polixis was aware that the wreckage had come down directly in front of and behind where he'd been crouched. Fire and metal had ripped through the redoubt, shredding the lightly armored Tamarans and pulverizing the defensive works. The apothecary was back up just seconds after the initial impact, throwing aside the debris that had covered him and shrugging off the gory remains of the guardsman who'd been beside him when the plane had hammered through. He paused briefly to tug the sliver of twisted metal that had sliced into his left vambrace free. The pulse of blood over the white ceramite clogged immediately, and he felt the sudden pain dull as his body blocked it out. He half-turned to assess his situation. Flames and black smoke had engulfed this section of the line. The remains of what looked like part of the Ork plane's fuselage lay embedded in the dirt barely a dozen feet away, fire licking from its wrecked husk. There was nobody alive in the immediate vicinity. Nobody human, anyway. There were Orks in the remains of the redoubt. The mobs attacking the Tamaran positions had taken advantage of the destruction unleashed by the wreckage, just as they'd done all along the line, using the reduction in Imperial firepower to cover the last few yards. Polixis stood alone. He didn't hesitate. His gladius was in his fist in an instant, spearing through an Ork's throat as it ran blindly through the smoke and ash, leaving it impaled and twitching as hot, dark blood jetted over the Ultramarine's forearm. He ripped the blade free and put two bolt rounds into the torso of a second Ork scrambling into the redoubt. The lack of visibility made Polixis feel as though he were the only one left defending the entire ridgeline. The thought sent fresh determination surging through his mind. He would hold this place alone if he had to.
"Come and die, Xenos scum!"
Two more orcs came at him out of the smoke, bellowing, cleavers raised. He tore open the stomach of one with a point-blank bolt round, then turned aside the swing of the other with his gladius. The first came on, despite its hideous injury, seeming oblivious to the thick intestinal strings spilling from its split gut as it tried to hack off the apothecary's right arm. He took the hit on his pauldron and drove the greenskin back with his superior height and bulk, a haymaker swing of his gladius keeping the second orc at bay as it recovered from its first strike. Behind them, he could see more rushing from the pall, tusks bared and weapons raised. There was no sign of any sort of imperial reserve to his rear. Teeth gritted, he fought on. Castor. The first orc to breach the imperial defences on Ridge 1 had its skull split open by Salve Imperator. Castor roared and kicked the broken corpse squarely in the stomach, sending it slamming back into the other greenskins, scrambling in its wake. Either side of him, Clastus's intercessors had switched to bolt pistols and their chainswords or gladii.
"In the name of the immortal Emperor and the restored Primarch, strike them down!"
Castor roared as energy wreathed his Crozius. The mace's skull tip slammed through the haft of an axe wielded by the next orc to scramble up through the ash and blood. The swing carried on, pulverizing its face and shattering its tusks, even as it howled in mindless alien fury. Castor brought his absolver up as he recovered from the killing strike. The heavy bolt pistol bucked in his gauntlet, its booming report every bit as fearsome as the chaplain's roared battle prayers. Still the orcs came, though, trampling their dead and their wounded, seemingly unable to do anything other than fling themselves against the humans' defences. Castor would have had it no other way. A crude chainsword struck the chaplain's right pauldron, juddering off the black ceramite with a screech of metal and a shower of sparks. At the same time, a stray round struck his helmet, ricocheting away and snapping his head to the left. He recovered immediately, snarling an oath of vengeance on behalf of his power armor as he brought Salve Imperator crashing down again. More orcs broke beneath his fury. Grey brain matter and shattered bone befouled his vestments and dripped from the stylized rib bones of his breastplate. He pressed forwards to the edge of the redoubt's remains, planting himself amidst the torn sandbags and broken bodies of the Faeburn vanquishers as he reaped with his Crozius Arcanum. Still the Xenos came, bellowing and grunting, eyes filled with manic fury. They thought nothing of death, nothing of pain or injury. All they desired was to fight. Castor welcomed each and every one, a litany on his lips. In the end, it was the Imperial Guard and not the Ultramarines who sealed the breach. A squad of Pyran veterans, including a trio of heavy flamer teams, pushed up from the south, spears of liquid flame engulfing those mobs still trying to force their way into the opening. Greenskin roars turned to howls of agony as flesh sloughed off and innards liquefied and billows of black smoke brought the gut-turning stench of charred alien meat with it. Castor snapped the neck of an orc that was ablaze from head to foot, half lifting the alien as flames licked around his black gauntlet before flinging it back down the ridge. Ahead of him, the breach had been turned into a wall of fire, filled with the writhing blackened forms of burning Xenos. The urge to burst through the flames and carry the fight to those beyond was almost more than Castor could bear. He forced himself to take a step back and deactivate his mace. Either side of him, Clastus and the intercessors who had held the breach with him, Thaddeus, Aneris, and Quiris, were all befouled with alien blood, their armor battered and rent. They'd carpeted the redoubt's scarred remains with orc corpses, their gladii and the teeth of their chainblades dripping with thick strings of Xenos viscera. The Imperial Guard moving in to secure the position were forced to tread on the bodies of the greenskins as they moved to set up a new firebase.
"Section 5 is secured," Castor voxed to Tyrannus,
pinging the message through the Astra Militarum's command channels.
"I am relocating."
He turned his attention to Clastus and his three intercessors, briefly grasping the forearm of each in turn.
"Well fought, brothers," he intoned. "We have done the Emperor's work here today. Hold this position."
While the flames had bought a respite around him, a glance at the state of the burst map on his visor told the chaplain that the opposite was true across the rest of the line. The chaos of a full-pitched battle was never adequately represented on charts or displays, even in real time, but what data that was available showed that well over half of the Imperial reserves had been committed at breach points all along Ridge 1. Four of the Fulminata's five combat squads had been, or were, currently engaged in close combat. Only Domitian's Hellblasters were keeping the Greenskins storming their section of the line at bay. The raw firepower of the plasma weapons decimating the mobs as rapidly as they gained ground. It was carnage, brought on by the destruction wreaked by the Greenskins' aerial attacks. The worst of the bombing runs seemed to have passed. Those aircraft not brought down were likely returning to their fleet to refuel and rearm, but they had done more than enough damage. The ridge line was close to breaking point.
"Salve! Redeploy to Sector 1," crackled the voice of Lieutenant Tyrannus over the private link. "Prime Tertiary requires immediate close support."
Castor was about to confirm the redeployment orders when her sigil on the burst map caught his eye. It was his brother's, and not only had it become separated from those belonging to the nearest squads, Nerva and Valorius, but the scroll feed indicated that the apothecary was engaged in hand-to-hand combat. Castor immediately turned south, keeping the channel to Tyrannus open as he went.
"Prime Alpha, Helix has been isolated. I am moving to support."
Polixis. This time there were too many. The wreckage of the dugout was flooding with Greenskins, trampling over their own dead as they poured into the gap torn in the Imperial line. Polixis stood firm in their midst, fighting with a cold, brutal efficiency. His focus was on his gladius, his every motion dedicated to its use as a death-dealing tool. It tore jugulars and carved open faces, sliced hamstrings, and took out eyes with clinical precision. Greenskins were hideously difficult beasts to kill. Their natural toughness and near immunity to both pain and fear was almost on a par with the Adeptus Astartes. Polixis made clean, hard, killing blows where he could, and disabled those he could not, leaving them clawing the ash, blind or unable to stand. Alien blood ran thick and black down the venal of his short sword, and pattered against his armor like foul, hot rain. On he fought, letting his armor take the inevitable blows that pierced his guard, trusting in the heavy Mark X plates.
"This is Polixis. My sector is breached,"
he snapped between blows, checking the Vox's transmitter in the corner of one eye. It was unresponsive. He fought on. It could only last so long. More orcs came for him, drawn as much by the cold, bloody resistance of a single determined warrior as by their desire to overrun the fracturing Imperial line. Polixis's subconscious, still assessing the situation beneath the endless, tireless work of his sword arm, registered a difference in the Greenskins surrounding him. A flurry of fresh blows fell at him from behind, and he turned in a tight, vicious circle, gladius swinging, to find another wave of orcs rushing the redoubt. These ones were coming from the rear of the ridge, though, rather than the front slope, and they were clad in grimy camo capes and spotting gear. Worse were their blades. They were slick with fresh blood. Polixis realized why the Imperial Guard hadn't flooded the section with reinforcements. The orcs now rushing him had used the breach to outflank and cut off whatever reserves had been moving up from behind. More blows rained down on the stranded apothecary. He turned aside the cleaver of one Greenskin and slashed the throat of another before returning to the first, driving it back into the press with a trio of strikes towards its lower torso, before flicking the gladius up to take it in the thorax. In the 4 seconds it took to do so, his armor registered another 3 hits, 2 ringing off his backpack, and another nicking the rear of his knee, piercing the joint seal, but not drawing blood. The Vox finally ticked active on his visor. He managed to say a single word.
"Castor!"
A slight overextension into a thrust, and one of the Xenos's serrated blades cut up and under his right pauldron. A jab of pain and fresh blood stained his white armor red. He grunted and twisted into the stab, using his superior bulk to smash the alien back and break its grip on its knife at the same time as he ripped his sword free from the skull of another. Bisected brain matter splattered those around as he stabbed once, twice, three times into the orc's gut, hard and fast, no room for finesse or broad sweeping blows. He ploughed his sword into another skull as he kicked the first orc down, trying to make more room, trying to force his way through the press as more strikes pounded from his backpack, pauldrons, and helmet. There was a hissing sound, followed by a violent crack. Polixis turned in time to see one of the cape-clad greenskins ramming what looked like a grok-sprong at him. Electric charge surged when its wire-coiled tip struck the apothecary's left pauldron. Power burst through his battle plate, searing through his black carapace and into his flesh and bones. He cried out, his muscles going into spasms before his jaw locked. His armor answered his pain. Servos shrieked, and his visor flared with a dozen critical warnings before its display blinked offline. The greenskin pulled the prong away, but energy continued to crackle across Polixis's armor. He shuddered, his body still struggling to function, in spite of the shock it has sustained. As the electricity that sparked across his battle plate started to short out, he tried to move, tried to force his aching muscles to obey. They wouldn't. At first, he thought his whole body had been paralyzed. Then he realized it was something worse. The Xenos prong hadn't only overloaded his autosensors, but had also burned through his servos, locking and immobilizing them. His armor had become a prison, and he was trapped in it, utterly helpless. The orcs rushed him. The first to lay its claws on his battle plate received the full force of the charge stored up in it, flinging it back against the bodies of its kin. The others came on regardless, bellowing with bloodthirsty excitement. Polixis tried to blink-click his visor display, but it remained blank and unresponsive. He braced himself for a rain of blows. Instead, a trio of greenskins slammed themselves bodily into him. Unable to react, he fell, hitting the bloody ash just as the orc with the prong reignited the electrodes. As pain flooded his body once again, and he felt hands gripping him, the terrible truth dawned. They weren't trying to kill him. They were trying to take him alive. Castor. Castor ran at full tilt, the platoon of Kelliston Stormers he'd requisitioned struggling to keep up. It was roughly 500 yards from the breach the chaplain had held to the locator marker representing his brother on the burst map. To get there, he had to pass through another melee next to Squad Nerva's redoubt. The Primaris burst in amongst the orcs who had fought their way over the parapet like a righteous thunderbolt, a storm of lightning-wreathed destruction that annihilated the greenskins in a matter of seconds. As the Numerians, who had been battling to hold the redoubt, scrambled back up to the firestep, he carried on, passing the hellblasters of Squad Domitian. Their plasma weapons were steaming, vents white-hot, dangerously close to overheating. Still they fired, though, laying down a curtain of actinic blue energy that turned mob after mob of charging greenskins into more ash to carpet the slope. Theirs was one of the few parts of the line where no Xenos had yet penetrated the defences. Beyond Domitian, Castor found a stretch of redoubts completely overrun by orcs. He charged them without any hesitation. Salve Imperata was a tool of annihilation, coursing with power. Scrap armor buckled and axe shafts splintered. Cleavers shattered and helmets were staved in with relentless, hate-fueled efficiency. The chaplain's boots ground broken alien bodies into the dirt and ash as he carried on and on, splitting skulls and breaking necks with each unstoppable overhead swing. For their own part, the orcs threw themselves at the rampant ultramarine without hesitation, their every thought bent towards their desire to fight and kill. The gigantic skull-faced warrior held no fear for them, even as he smashed his way implacably through their mobs. All he was to them was a challenge. Victory meant power, while death to them held no meaning. Their mindless tenacity was what made their race so deadly. Their blades and slug rounds had torn his vestments in half a dozen places, and almost every plate of his black armor was scraped silver in one part or another, The ceramite cut right down to the plasteel beneath. Some of the blows penetrated, but Castor didn't notice the pain before his body blocked it out. His mind was a sea of fury, driven by the need to reach Polixis. Everything else, rallying the guard, holding the ridgeline, driving back the endless Xenos tide, had been consumed by the fires of his rage. He could not fail now. To do so would spell disaster on every imaginable level. The guard didn't so much support his attack as simply follow the trail of brutalized Xenos corpses he left behind. It felt like an age, but finally the Primaris chaplain found himself without any enemies before him. He had smashed a path of destruction through the Xenos attack. Behind him, the Numerians and Kelestani secured the remains of the redoubt, driving into the orcs amid a flurry of rapid lasfire. Castor ignored them, pressing on past the Zoyshen infantry holding the next section. The fire-streaked dust and darkness rendered visibility infuriatingly low, but the burst map sigil put Polixis just 100 yards ahead. Castor was almost there when the marker blinked from existence. It displayed neither injury warnings nor a death signifier. It simply vanished. For the first time in his life, the chaplain swore. He followed up with a roared battle litany as more greenskins appeared on the edge of the sandbag tunnel connecting the Zoyshen's position and the next section. His charge, pauldron first, slammed the first orc clean off its feet, his boots snapping its throat as he carried on, bolt pistol blazing in one fist and Crozius ignited in the other. He rounded the corner into the next dugout, and instead of more redoubts, found himself presented with a barren expanse of devastation. It looked as though a greenskin aircraft had crashed directly into the section of redoubt ahead. He'd been aware of one of their fighters, riddled with flak, roaring overhead earlier, but his mind had been too focused on repelling the assault on his own section of the line to consider exactly where the plane had come down. Now it was obvious. Burning wreckage and twisted metal had decimated the churned-up ash, and the sandbags and flakboards that had once constituted the defensive works had been scattered and torn to pieces. The area was also crawling with greenskins. The nearest turned as Castor came round the corner into the remains of the position. The Primaris took in what lay before him in a single second, not only the carnage that had broken apart the defences, but the dozen or so green brutes struggling to heft something over what was left of the redoubt's parapet. It was a body, seemingly inert. Through the blood and grime, Castor caught the flash of white ceramite.
"Helix!"
he roared. The name amplified by his helm to such a degree that even the greenskins cringed back. He flung himself in the direction of his older brother, the last vestiges of restraint scorched from his mind by the need to reach the apothecary. The orcs that stood against him were an indistinct blur, blood and broken bone, the chaplain's whole body blazing with combat stims and raw adrenaline as he pushed himself to his limit. Castor understood failure in that moment. Even as roaring alien warriors broke and died beneath his weapon, he saw Moor hauling his blood brother beyond his reach. His mind slowed the entire situation down as his body went into overdrive, and everything was rendered with a surreal degree of clarity. He saw the skull of the orc in front of him, splinter, brain matter bursting slowly upwards around Salve Imperator's head, shattered bone and broken tusks spinning away. He saw the flare of a slugger muzzle beating out a tattoo as its owner sprayed shots inaccurately over his head. He saw lasbolts searing into the press around him, punching through green flesh and rusting armor, wounds sizzling as they cauterized. He saw Polixis, his brother, being dragged like so much loot out over the parapet and down the corpse-littered slopes beyond, his captors bellowing and gesticulating triumphantly. The apothecary seemed incapable of movement, immobilized. The realization twisted Castor's gut and sent a fresh metabolic surge of adrenaline through his veins. He had to reach him. The orcs struggled with the apothecary's weight, but there were enough of them. They were hauling him away faster than Castor could force his way through their kin. For every beast he broke, another pressed itself into him. bellowing and snapping its foul maw, pounding impotently on his ribbed black armor with fists and clubs, cleavers, axes, and chain blades.
"Emperor, give me strength!"
Castor roared, knowing, even as he did so, that neither his zeal nor his transhuman body would be sufficient. He was still fighting and still praying as the Imperial Guard stormed in around him with lasbolts and bayonets, while the body of his brother disappeared out into the darkness of the ash-shrouded night. The end came with the dawn. It was a miserable, uncertain thing, a grey pall beneath an ugly orange star, its light weakened and tainted by the dust that still hung heavy in Akara's atmosphere. As the new day bled weak, watery colour back into the world, the last acts of violence played out along Ridge One, a few lasbolts snapping away into the lifting ash shroud, the rattle of a slug weapon somewhere out in the half-dark, the detonation of a final shell, its payload twitching corpses and furrowing dirt out on the slopeside. Silence followed, like the quiet that came after the last pattering raindrops of a storm. Castor knelt amidst the wreckage. The blood on his armor and vestments had congealed, leaving encrusted streaks and stains on the ancient plate. Though Imperial forces had long since retaken the breach in which he had fought, none of the mortals nearby dared approach him. Most probably assumed he was in prayer. In reality, he was searching for something. He had seen his brother taken. He had seen him incapacitated somehow, and dragged away by Xenos savages. But he hadn't seen his gladius until now. The short sword was embedded in the skull of a greenskin half buried by a mound of its dead kindred. Castor looked into its sightless eyes, into a face forever twisted into a bestial rictus of mindless hatred. Eventually, he placed one gauntlet on its thick jaw, another on the gladius's grip, and pulled. The weapon came free with a crunch, grey brain matter oozing down its length. Castor stood and looked around. The defenders of Ridge One were blinking and sluggish in the wan light, like men awakening from a nightmare. Picket teams and skirmish chains were being thrown out down the slope, bone-weary, while officers with raw throats pressed bloodshot eyes to the rubber cowling of their magnoculars. All reports Castor could hear over the vox said the same thing. The orc tide had receded, pulling back with first light to the eastern edge of Shabbat, where they continued to fight amongst themselves and lick their wounds. Castor watched in silence as flamer teams were deployed to the forward slope to clean the mounds of Xenos dead piled there, and soon a thick pall of stinking black smoke hung over the remains of the Imperial line. There were no unengaged reserves left to be brought up to relieve those units still in position, but Chevik had approved a corps-wide order, Castor assumed without consulting Field Marshal Kloss, allowing commanders to stand down every second man on a rotating basis throughout the morning. Guardsmen slept where they had fought, sitting on their fire steps with their backs to dug-out walls, cradling their lasguns. A few tugged aside their respirators long enough to chew down ration bars, risking grey-throat and eye-rot for the sake of easing the ache in their bellies. Many more just sat in silence. The chaplain checked the location markers still winking across his visor display. The Fulminata remained at their posts. Tyrannus and Samson were touring the line together, speaking to each sergeant in turn. All the squads had been reduced to combat teams to cover as many of the breaches as possible. These had been further decreased by casualties sustained over the course of the night's storm assaults. According to the reports, three brothers were dead. Spurius from Nerva, Dinotar from Valorius, and Lucarius from Clastis. Three more had been badly injured. Brother Clovens had lost an arm, and Celis a hand, both from Squad Clastis, while Servio of Squad Faustus had suffered a mangled leg following the destructive work of an orc bomber's munitions. All three were stable. The bodies and equipment of the three fallen had been taken to the rear. Castor assumed that the ranking sergeant, Nerva, had overseen the removal of their progenoids. It would have been difficult work with Polixis gone. The thought brought a cold anger with it. Castor's fists clenched, and it took long seconds to master himself, to not cry out in rage or vent his fury on the alien corpses heaped beneath him. Eventually, he stirred himself. He forced his thoughts back to the importance of his duties, murmuring a blessing to his brother's gladius and maglocking it before moving down the line. As he went from one squad to another, he paused and led the assembled battle brothers in brief prayers of thankfulness, his voice low and level as he offered up veneration to the Primarch and the Emperor. He anointed the armor and brows of those who wished for it with sacred unguent from one of his Sanctus vials, and offered additional prayers of guidance and strength alongside those who had been badly injured. Last of all, he stood over the three bodies of brothers Spurius, Dinator, and Lucarius, laid out side by side near the rear of General Chevik's command dome, and guarded by Brother Marius. The words of the funerary rites were whipped away by the rising wind, each utterance as cold as the wasteland chill that bit through to bone and marrow. When the service was ended, Custer waited alongside the bodies. Ordinarily, he would have returned to the forward positions and looked to the faith of the Astra Militarum. At times, even the iron will of the Adeptus Astartes required guidance following battle's tempest, and there were thousands of warriors across the ridgeline without the strength lent to them by genetic enhancement. Hundreds would have benefited from the chaplain's pastorship, but he didn't move until Tyrannus returned from the redoubts and completed his briefing with Chevik and Klos. The Primaris lieutenant saluted Castor, clenching his fist to his breastplate. The chaplain returned the gesture, but remained silent. Tyrannus spoke first.
"The reinforcements from Croton are approaching. Their outriders are a little over 2 hours from our rear echelons."
When Castor remained silent, he continued.
"Klos is rotating the 5th and 8th Corps into reserve come nightfall, when the main column comes up. We will hold our positions here. Aerial scans showed that the Greenskins are massing for another attack amidst the slum ruins, and we expect the bomber wings to return from low orbit before the end of the day."
"He was still alive," Castor said.
It was Tyrannus's turn to remain silent as the chaplain went on, as though the lieutenant hadn't been speaking.
"They disabled him somehow, locked his armor, but he was alive. Of that I'm certain."
"I believe you are correct, Brother Chaplain," Tyrannus said slowly. "But they have him now. It is likely he is deep within the city's ruins, and whether he yet lives..."
"He does," Castor said,
a hint of fire flickering behind his softly spoken words.
"I would know if he had passed on."
"His loss is a grievous blow," Tyrannus said. "The Fulminata have suffered enough on this world already."
"I will recover him. I will go myself, and I will return him to the chapter, dead or alive."
Castor knew it would have been easy for Tyrannus to respond immediately. It would have been natural for him to order the chaplain to abandon his plan straight away, to demand he adhere to the Codex's chain of command and focus on his duty towards the rest of the Fulminata. But he was Demeter's protege, and he knew Castor. Instead of interrupting the chaplain, he held his silence while Castor continued.
"The Fulminata need him. The chapter itself needs him. He is our apothecary, and he holds the legacy of us all in his hands."
"He is also your blood brother," Tyrannus said, in a tone that anywhere else would have sounded almost conciliatory.
"I will not deny that," Castor admitted. "I will not claim that I am motivated by duty alone. My heart burns for him, for what he is assuredly suffering even now. That is why I will go alone. I will not risk any of our brotherhood in this task, and that is why I pray you also see fit to release me."
"You are presumptive, Brother Chaplain," Tyrannus said. "I understand your desire to retrieve your blood brother, and I acknowledge, too, that rescuing him would greatly benefit the Fulminata, regardless of your familial bond.
but I reject your insinuation that losing you also would have little further consequence. In the past few days, we have suffered the deaths of Captain Demeter, the company's ancient, and Techmarine Tiberon. We have lost our standard, Extremis, and now our apothecary, not to mention almost a third of our battle brothers who have been killed or grievously wounded. To lose our chaplain as well would amount to something not far removed from a death blow.
You honor me, brother lieutenant, Castor started.